Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 56 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Important to Farmers, Important for America, about agricultural economist Matt Roberts' presentation at the 2017 Grain Growers Convention. I was standing in back of the luncheon crowd near the soundboard where I can plug in my recording equipment when I noticed a 40-something man doing a little pacing not far from me. I figured he was the speaker, and I introduced myself. Matt Roberts was a tenured university professor 11 months ago when he left the hallowed and stable halls of academia to establish himself as a speaker. Don't laugh. It's a good gig. Top-of-the-line speakers command $20,000 or more for an hour of their time. Roberts, who bills himself as an agricultural and energy expert, already has a lot of practice. He has given more than 700 presentations, and that doesn't count teaching classes. As someone who has witnessed dozens of speakers over the years, I'm more aware than most that there are good ones and bad ones. But the best, well, they're beyond good. They have a confidence that they communicate along with their message. I asked Roberts about that, and he agreed, suggesting that reading books by con men is one avenue for learning that particular trick of the trade. Roberts is no con man, but it is fascinating to think that the same confidence that makes a good convention speaker can make for a good flim-flam man as well. As my regular listeners know, I've already included many presentations from the 2017 Tri-State Grain Growers Convention, which was held in Spokane November 9th to 12th, beginning with episode 50. As a result, I thought perhaps I wouldn't create a podcast out of Robert's remarks. Then I listened to him again and changed my mind. Although his educational background is as an agricultural economist, there is an element of soothsayer to what Roberts does, and when I listened to his speech a second time, I realized that, hey, in just a couple of months since he spoke, his predictions have proved pretty accurate. Roberts opened his talk enumerating all the ways the country is divided, but since we already know that, I'm bringing you an edited version of his comments on subjects that mean something to wheat farmers right now. The Farm Bill, regulation, trade, the deficit, and USDA reports.
Current Farm Bill expires September 2018. Now, we look at history. The last time that a Farm Bill was passed on time without an extension was 2002. In 2002, if you remember, we were swimming in budget surpluses. There was an extra $40 billion that could be spent on the Farm Bill. So guess what? It was really easy to get a Farm Bill passed because everybody got what they wanted. It was trick or treat. We're not in that situation now. House Ag Committee has already said their slate, their agenda for debate in committee is full for the rest of 2017. The earliest the Farm Bill gets on that is maybe January, but probably February 2018. So it's going to be a tight window to get the Farm Bill passed. Then we talk about, well, who needs what for the elections? Because, of course, if you're in D.C., if you're an elected representative, what's your primary job? To get reelected, right? Incentives matter, right? It's like it or not, this is a system we've created. It's the worst system in the world, except all the others, as you heard Mark kind of allude to. But the Farm Bill is this opportunity to be bipartisan. It's this opportunity to maybe get some people in the fold, for some legislators to bring home some pork. The question is, which party is going to need more of a win in 2018? What I think we're going to see, for a reason I'm going to go through in a second, I expect in 2018 we're going to see more gridlock, we're going to see a one-year extension of the current Farm Bill, very small changes, and then the real bill gets written in 2019. Okay? The main reason that I know we're going to get one is what I like to call nuclear farm policy. Anybody know what happens if Congress doesn't pass a farm bill? Does it go away? We revert back to the what's called permanent law. It's mostly the 1948 Agricultural Act, but it's also partially 33 and 49. Anybody remember the concept of parity prices? Every quarter, USDA creates an agricultural prices paid report. Pages 30 through 32, even it's funny on PDF, you still almost have to blow the dust off of them. They calculate parity prices. And if the farm bill actually expires, how does 1770 wheat support sound to you? Right? 13 in corn, $1.91 in cotton, $73.40 in lentils, milk $52. I'm guessing there's probably more than a few people who are going, I'm okay with not passing a farm bill. Right? Why are we working so hard on this? Suddenly we see association, you know, regulatory or legislative affairs committees disbanded across the country. But this is proof as to why. We know we're going to get a farm bill, okay? We know it's not going to expire. The question is simply a political one. Does it get changed in 18 or does it get changed in 19? And what has always driven that is who's unhappy with the farm bill? Who is loudest and unhappiest with the farm bill? The reality is, I'm sorry, the 2019 farm bill, I think, is going to be a relatively minor update of the 2012. And the reason I think it's going to be a relatively minor update is we don't have widespread dissatisfaction with the farm bill like we've had in some previous years. There are some groups that are unhappy with it. I'll come to that. Okay, SNAP is not going to change. The idea that we pull SNAP out of the farm bill means the farm bill never does get passed. Okay, it's simply you need those votes. I think we'll see some mild, easily circumvented insurance payment limits. Most of the pressure on the commodity title is Southern and dairy. Okay? So this is cotton is very unhappy. Dairy is very unhappy with the current farm bill. Outside of that, most other areas, they may not love it, but we're generally not seeing hatred of it. I think the one change there is maybe giving growers an opportunity to switch, to make that re-election they did in the last farm bill if they want to move from ARC-CO into PLC. Okay, that's something I'm hearing a lot about. That'll have some pretty significant budget consequences. But otherwise, people aren't generally, don't hate the current farm bill. And with the amount of difficulty we've seen getting any legislation through, and farm bill can't go through reconciliation. It has to go through normal order. Taking it through normal order, which means committee debates, floor debates, all of that, I don't see the will or the capacity to get a completely new bill written from scratch. Okay? CRP, I don't believe CRP grows primarily due to dollar constraints. Okay? We need more dollars to allocate to it. Trade. This is my biggest area for concern. What I don't actually honestly know, I don't honestly know if this administration is actually anti-trade or they see it as a bargaining chip at their core. And that's the confusing bit. If it comes right down to it, what happens? All right? And it matters because, you know, again, I'm from the Midwest. I realize that's oftentimes coming out here kind of a dirty word. They think all we grow is corn and soybeans. That's not actually true. It's just all we care about growing. A quarter of our corn exports go to Mexico. Okay, 25, half a billion bushels of corn goes to Mexico. Put this in context. We just saw a USDA report where yield was raised 4 bushels to the acre. That's equivalent to a 6.5 bushel to the acre yield increase if that comes on the market. 6.5 bushels. Soybean, 62% of soybean exports go to China. That's 31% of our total annual production. And the reason this matters for those of you who are on the regulatory action teams, a lot of people early on or still oftentimes will say, but Dr. Roberts, China still needs the soybeans. Okay, they can't go to zero. And that's exactly right. But if a trade war erupts, History shows us ag is always one of the first victims. Go back to the steel tariffs in 2002, 2003. Ag's politically sensitive. It's politically connected. It's easy to track. It will get tariffed in any sort of trade, not even a NAFTA, not even a chorus, just a trade war, just a currency manipulation kind of thing. It's going to hit us. And what it means is it looks something like this. We have a 20% tariff on soybeans levied against U.S. beans. It's not levied against South America. They still are going to need our beans, but guess what ability they have to negotiate on price now? Okay, and the reality is that price change gets pushed back to farmers. So, largest beef buyers, Japan, South Korea, Mexico. Japan, Mexico, and Canada, I didn't finish that, are largest pork buyers. But here's the good news on this. There's still discussion on this. The Constitution has this funny little thing in it that says the Congress shall have power to regulate commerce with foreign nations. That's why trade deals have to go through Congress. There's very strong opinion that the presidency alone cannot repeal NAFTA, cannot repeal CORUS, cannot actually make America leave any trade deals. The president has the right to notify trading partners that we intend to leave, but the presidency cannot actually leave the deal himself. Only Congress can do that. And I think that's important because, and I think it's clear that this Congress will not let that happen. So the good news is, I believe trade deals are relatively safe. There's still a fear that through executive action, you could see customs interfering with some of that. But I think our trade deals are safe. And once I talked to some trade attorneys about this, I became much less worried about trade. And regulatory relief. Like I said, Waters of the United States, Department of Labor, other EPA regulations, we're already seeing those roll back. We're seeing through court cases being dropped. We're seeing changes in the tone in D.C. towards agriculture and other industry. And I believe right now this is going to be where we see the biggest effect of this administration, is continued regulatory relief. So we are in a state of gridlock. We're in a state of gridlock. We have been for years. I think you could probably argue at least 5 or 6 years. Let me suggest to everybody here, because we use that in kind of a dirty way. You know, it's kind of like politics. As Mark said, you know, we at least we get to elect people. Okay? Gridlock might not be something that we should talk about in such a bad way. Think about this. Over the past 30 years, 40 years, when's the economy grown the fastest? Sometime pull out a chart. 1995 to 2000, the last 6 years of the Clinton, of Bill Clinton. What was D.C. worried about? A blue dress and an intern. I was talking to a friend recently who was an intern in the Clinton White House. And he said, you know, the funniest thing is, he's a guy, he said, you know, the funniest thing is we were constantly being kept away from the president, the interns were. Because we thought it was because he was just really busy. It was only later we figured out it might have been for a different reason. But Congress was totally gridlocked. D.C. was totally gridlocked. And guess what? The economy just grew and grew. We can go to 2003, 2007, the last 6 years of Bush 43. Same thing. We've got all the worry about the war. We've got all the fighting about whether we should or shouldn't be there and this and that and the other. Nothing really happened after the first midterms. Very little substantive legislation got passed in the final 6 years of Bush 43's administration. And the economy did what? It grew. 2013 to 2016, an obstructionist Congress. Okay, you could maybe even argue we could take that back to maybe 2012, 2011. Basically, the last four, five, 6 years of Obama, not much happened. And guess what? We had solid growth. Here's something to think about. As a business owner, maybe sometimes just knowing the rules of the game isn't such a bad thing. What I believe, and a business strategic planner once told me, he said, you know, for my business, I don't care if the laws are good. I don't care if the laws are bad. Just tell me the laws and keep them the same so I can get around to planning. I think the gridlock that we are facing right now is actually a positive thing. I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing because what it allows us to do is worry about our businesses and not worry about DC coming in and changing them. Particularly in a permissive regulatory environment, we're not worried about the rulemaking either. It allows us to plan. It allows all businesses to plan. And I think that's the strongest driver of economic growth over these past four decades is gridlock.
At this point, Roberts opened his presentation to questions. The first questioner didn't have a microphone. The question was simple. What about the deficit? The second question came from yours truly.
What about the deficit? We've been told the deficit doesn't matter. Right before that, we were told it really does matter. And right before that, we were told it doesn't matter. What about the deficit? That worries me. The issue is, I mean, and if you ever get to buttonhole a legislator, ask them why they care so much about deficits when the economy is weak and they don't care about them when it's strong. The truth should be the opposite. The real problem with the deficit is not specifically the size of it. It's the size of it given the interest rates we're at. So the United States, quick policy rule of thumb, the United States is the world's largest insurance company that happens to have an army. Okay? Why? Because if you look at the budget, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, defense, and interest on the debt, that is every tax dollar goes to those five things. Anything that is not one of those five things is paid for in the deficit. And the problem is, if we go from having 2% long-term rates to 4% long-term rates, which historically we would have giggled about, right? We've now doubled the size or the debt that we, our deficit payments, our interest payments. It matters. The problem is, you know what it takes for us to tackle it? Sacrifice, right? What politician, show me a politician who's ever been elected promising tax increases, right? And even cuts are always on somebody else. I mean, that's like dairies working together. I mean, that was, you know, every dairyman wanted somebody else to cull some cows, right? So it matters. The problem is, when are we going to see the political will to do something about it? Because the reality is the only way we do something about it is sharply curtail Social Security and Medicare, or defense, or raise taxes non-trivially. It's going to be hard to actually square the circle otherwise.
How reliable are the reports of the markets? I have farmers who talk to me about the markets, and they just, you know, they don't believe them, or and I'm talking USDA numbers and whatnot, and yep. They believe that USDA is actually, you know, controlling the market in some way. How do you respond to that?
There's a tremendous amount of academic evidence that USDA reports suck less than anybody else's. Okay? And that is about as articulate as I can phrase that. I know, I hear the exact same thing. The reality is the USDA reports are the best that are out there. They're not perfect. And even among them, certain ones, crop progress reports are lousy reports, those weekly reports. The monthly reports are actually pretty good, and there's a lot of evidence around them. You know, the reality is it's impossible to disprove a conspiracy theory, so I hear all the same things. What I like to ask back to farmers when they tell me or when they state, and there's some very prominent analysts who also state the same thing, they'd like to see USDA get rid of these, is if the reports are that bad, then why does the market care? Okay? One can't simply say we should get rid of them and let the private sector, let the Informas of the world or ADM or Cargill put those out because they'll, you know, the market will know how to take those. Well, why don't they do the same with the USDA? The reality is most of us believe fundamentally more information is better. And if you believe in the market will discount the bad and work with the good. And the reason the market cares about the USDA is because historically they have been wrong to a smaller degree and less often than private sector forecasts. Once, and this is an asterisk, once you understand what they're saying in those reports, once you understand the timing of those reports.
If you're like me, then Robert's presentation gave you food for thought. His observations about gridlock being our friend were particularly interesting. Since we can expect to see a good deal more gridlock over the next few years, perhaps this is the time to try out projects on the farm that demand a degree of dependability when it comes to regulations. Good luck! That's all the time we have. I hope you've enjoyed episode 56, or what I've called Important to Farmers, Important for America, about Matt Roberts' presentation to the 2017 Tri-State Grain Growers Convention. Please join me again next time for another episode of Weed All About It!
Grass is fine if you've got a cut or 4 feet and stand in the mud, but we've got two and teeth to chew. Don't give us none of that vegetarian stew. We're carnivores and we ain't ashamed. The reason's simple, it's in the refrain. We feed you.